This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are discussing Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, Chapter 9 and 10, The Woes of Mrs. Weasley and Luna Lovegood. In these chapters, Sirius is being a little bitch.
And what did I one of my notes is Mrs. Weasley was flipping her shit. Yeah. So, yeah.
Sirius is a little bitch. Mrs. Weasley is losing her shit. And chapter 10, we meet one of my top three favorite characters.
Miss Luna Lovegood. I'm so excited. It's my niece's favorite character too.
Yes. But first, we have the very long chapter of chapter 9, The Woes of Mrs. Weasley. So even before we get back to Grimmauld Place, there is a little interaction Harry has, you know, while leaving the ministry.
Yeah. Are you talking about where he throws all the galleons in the...
First he leaves the courtroom. And he's not sure if he can leave yet. So he takes a few steps and no one's telling him to stop. And so he just hightails it out of there.
As he should. And then there's... Go ahead, sorry.
He bumps into Weasley and Mr. Weasley. And he's like, oh, cleared of all charges. And Mr. Weasley's so relieved. And we get a small interaction between Percy and Harry and Arthur.
Yeah, this is also where Mr. Weasley is kind of like, oh my gosh, they had like the full court in session for you. That's a little much, but, sorry, I was trying to look for I went to Lucius Malfoy, Mr. Weasley and Percy and Harry. I don't know if I would call it the warmest interaction.
No, not at all. And I'm just... You know, I'm not saying that Percy is right, but I just kind of, you know, a part of me has always been curious about to have more detail of like what the fight between Mr. Weasley and Percy looks like, because certainly the issue of like whether believing Harry is right or not, you know, came up. But I think there's a lot of things building up that would have finally led Percy to take such a strong like stance.
Yeah.
And again, going back to something I've always been curious about with Mr. Weasley in terms of how much do we blame or praise him for like not playing the Game of Thrones and like, but that causes him to be a little not as astute like Ned Stark. So I think maybe Arthur could have done a little better in like kind of telling Percy, who is clearly very ambitious and wants to go to the bureaucratic route of, you know, climbing up the ranks and just be like, you know, look, you know, this is the reality. There are these prejudices. This is why, you know, I haven't been able to advance, you know, as much, you know, in my career as maybe I could have. You're going to have to decide like what values you're willing to, you know, not compromise and which you need to be like more sneaky about.
Yeah, I feel like that's a very real kind of struggle, not only in the wizarding world, but the real life world. You know, what are you willing to sacrifice to get to where you want to be? And some some people are like, I am not willing to sacrifice X, and that's can sometimes be seen as unambitious, which that's not necessarily true.
No, it's not necessarily true. And yeah, so Mr. Weasley's mouth tightened slightly, but other than this, he gave no sign that he had noticed his third son. Yep.
Icing him out.
And Harry's just like, so what will you have to do about the toilet? Grinning. Everything suddenly seemed five times funnier than usual.
Yeah, like, I mean, I guess again, to bring it to real life, we can all relate to when there's this, like, heavy burden that's all of a sudden you're relieved of it, and then it's like, oh, things aren't as bad as I kind of, as they felt for a while.
Yep, and so they're walking along, and next to Cornelius Fudge is who else but Lucius Malfoy. So how do you think Harry handled this in light of, again, the last time Harry saw Lucius was in a crazy ritual in the graveyard?
The occult, the hardcore occult ritual of the Harry Potter books thus far. I don't know. You know, I guess I probably wouldn't be too dissimilar. We still get a little of that Harry Potter sass, which I don't have. You know, he's like, what are you doing here anyway? And it's, I can't say, I don't know, my expectation wouldn't be Harry would be like flipping out and being like, I saw you with Death Eater and whatever. But, you know, I don't know. He could kind of handle the best he could in this situation. I don't know.
Like, not that I think I expect Harry to flip out. I just wouldn't have the ability to be that sassy. I would be like in trauma shock.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, what do they call it? Fight, or freeze. And I always am kind of in the tendency to freeze. And I think, like, you know, Harry seems to have a little bit of that fire and that little bit of little fight.
Yep, and it's like, well, Patronus Potter. The minister was just telling me about your lucky escape, Potter. Quite astonishing the way you continue to wriggle out of very tight holes. Snake-like, in fact. Yeah, said Harry. Yeah, I'm good at escaping.
There's some little shade there. Some little knowing barbs in that exchange.
Yeah. So, and it's like, and Mr. Weasley too. What are you doing here, Arthur? I work here.
Lucius Malfoy he's something else, isn't he?
Yeah, and it's like, what are you doing here anyway, said Harry. I don't think private matters between myself and the minister are any concern of yours, Potter.
So where this is going, because Lucius is talking to Cornelius Fudge, right? Is like they're giving all these signs in that Cornelius is possibly a Death Eater, is where I took it. But then they dispel it like right away. So,
well, at the very least, you know, it comes up that Harry's like, you know, if we know that known Death Eaters are meeting privately with Fudge, like, how do we know they haven't put an Imperius curse on him? Don't think it hadn't occurred to us, Harry, but Dumbledore thinks Fudge is acting of his own accord at the moment, which, as Dumbledore said, is not a lot of comfort.
That's where kind of like when I was listening to this, that's where my mind went. I was like, oh, he's Death Eater. And it's like, well, of course, they probably would have thought of that, you know, the ministry or whomever. So I don't know. He's up to something, though, for sure.
Of course. And it's like, what business do they have? And it's just like gold.
Yeah. Gold. Oh, gosh.
Yep. Gold. And then so they find, you know, they skedaddle, leave the ministry. But before they do, with a grin at the thought of what Hermione would say if she could see the statue, Harry turned his money bag upside down and emptied not just 10 galleons, but the whole contents into the pool at the statue's feet. Which is nice, because again, the proceeds do go to St. Mungo's Hospital. It does go to a worthy cause. I think it might have been a little tactless to do this in front of Arthur, knowing their financial situation. That's always bugged me.
That's funny that you say that, because I had a similar thought. I was kind of like, I mean, that's fine, but the Weasleys have done a lot for Harry. So like maybe just, I know they wouldn't probably take the charity, that, you know, they'd probably like, no. But there, I feel like he could get it to them in a way that would be a little sneaky.
Yeah. So there's that. And it cuts off to back at Grimmauld Place. "I knew it," yelled Ron. "You always get away with stuff."
He's not wrong.
Yeah, he's not wrong. And Harry's like, "Everyone seems quite relieved, though, considering all they knew I'd get off." And which is, again, very true in the sense of everyone knows, like, the actual letter of the law that Harry's in the right. But they, you know, they just don't know and didn't, you know, they didn't want to underestimate how badly Fudge wanted to just force this issue, regardless of, like, you know, the truth of the matter.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's always, I think, and again, to relate it to like the very human, like, you know, you kind of know, but then there's always this, at least for me, an anxiety riddled human being, there's always this seed of doubt, like, well, maybe it's not going to work out that way.
Yeah. So. And that's, you know, I guess as I get older and I'm more jaded by like the court system and things like that, and I'm just like, it doesn't matter what the law is, it's who has the power.
That's 100% true. Ugh.
Yeah, so it's like when one of a job I used to work at, where a coworker was calling out like the director on some things that they weren't always, you know, they weren't classifying our jobs in the most appropriate way for taxes and stuff, and he fired her the next day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, like, and she was, of course, she was absolutely right, but being right in that situation didn't matter at all.
Right. That's unfortunate part of living in this world, which I think has gotten a little more exposure thanks to people recording stuff on their phones and social media and things like that. So,
yeah. And so all around, Fred, George, and Dinny are doing this sort of hopping war dance of he got off, he got off, he got off, which doesn't have the same connotation in American English, but to get off in British English does mean
okay. It's like, what's the most tactful way we can say this? I was listening to Jim Dale read this, and I'm like, what are we saying here? It made me giggle.
I didn't have enough exposure to British English when I first read this. But yeah, when I've read enough novels that take place in England or with British characters, where I now know what that means more fully in slang.
That's, yes. Hopefully not all the American kids got a big giggle out of it, but this older lady did. So.
Yep. And so there, yeah, of course, you know, Dumbledore turned up on your side. There was no way they were going to convict you. Yeah, he swung it for me. He felt it would have sounded highly ungrateful, not to mention childish, to say, "I wish he'd talked to me, though, or even looked at me."
Man, I need to get my shit together, because he says that's childish, and I probably would have been like, why didn't he talk to me, though? So,
yeah.
Oh, well.
And what do we got?
Harry. Oh, he's got the scar burning.
Yeah, his scar burning just because... You know, specifically just the thought of Dumbledore makes his scar hurt.
Suspicious.
Yes. Put a pin in that.
Okay. I'm just gonna...
Yep.
Don't hurt my Dumbledore here. I mean, I know Dumbledore's fate. Let's just get that out of the way. But please don't make him evil. I don't know that.
Yep. And so they're all sitting down for lunch. Fred, George, and Ginny are still singing.
Can I just make a note? This what? Lunch... My God, like mashed potatoes, roasted chicken, like it's kind of full on. That is not a lunch that I would have growing up. So good for them.
Yeah, no, well, I think it's a sort of celebratory lunch.
Okay. I didn't know if that was just like the...
It was either going to be a celebratory lunch or drowning their sorrows because Harry got expelled lunch.
Yeah, well, she was ready.
Yeah, it's like when I, you know, do happy hour, whether it's good news or bad news.
That's good.
You go celebrate or go wallow.
Yes, for sure.
Yep. Then, over the next few days, Harry could not help noticing that there was one person within number 12 Grimmauld Place who did not seem wholly overjoyed that he would be returning to Hogwarts. So what do you feel about, you know, Sirius and this whole dynamic?
I can't figure out if Harry's right, because Harry is thinking like he, you know, that this whole sentiment that he reminds Sirius of his father, and there might be this whole like affection for him that's misplaced, and that Sirius is really bummed that he's going back to Hogwarts. I don't trust it. Like, I feel like that might not be, that's not right. I feel like Sirius is probably like, sure, he misses, you know, he misses Harry's dad, but I don't know. I think it's a little, I think Harry's a little, you know, I don't think he's on the right track with that thought.
Yeah. And it's also what Hermione's thinking, because you belong in Hogwarts and Sirius knows it. Personally, I think he's being selfish.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like, I don't know. I'm not sure that they're, I feel like they're a little off course here.
Yeah, do you think Sirius is worrying about something else? And if so, absolutely. What is it?
Don't know yet. What's going to happen at Hogwarts? Because there is something that happens here in this chapter that seems pretty spot on. Ron and Hermione get prefect badges, but Harry does not.
Yes. So, yeah, what do we've got here? So, yes, Spew found some daydreaming, they've been cleaning out, been packing, and they get their school list. Only two new books, he said. The Standard Book of Spells, Grade 5, by Miranda Goshark, and Defense of Magical Theory by Wilbert Slinkhard. And so they're deducing that by the nature of the second book, Dumbledore must have finally gotten a Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher.
Right, right. I'm not going to guess who it is. I think I know, but I don't think I'm right.
Yep, and it's like not surprising, is it, when you look at what's happened to the last four? One sacked, one dead, one memory removed, and one locked in a trunk for 9 months.
Not the best luck, the Defense Against the Dark Arts teachers.
There's one like building or like space in downtown in the city where I live where I joke that it has the Defense Against the Dark Arts curse because so many businesses have set up there and failed.
Man, I used to be like the Defense of the Dark Arts incarnate when I used to work places. Places would shut down after I left. Not like because I was such a horrible employee. It just kept happening. It was so strange. So
yeah. So the place that's there now, they're called Inkwell, and they're a cafe. And my husband and I went there just to like study and work. And they had the most delicious lavender lattes, and you know their English muffins were pretty good too. So I hope they stay in business because they're a nice little cafe.
Let's hope they don't share the same fate as these professors.
No, let's hope not. So Ron is like basically dumbfounded because there is a prefix badge in his letter.
Right, and Ron is, I guess, a little bit self-aware enough to be like, I'm kind of always been the middle of the road kind of, you know, side character. And this is kind of a big deal, you know, for me.
Yeah. And Fred and George do not make it easy for him at all. Like they're borderline offended.
Which, yeah, I mean, they got a lot. Well, you know, we have Percy was the last prefect and he really was proud of that.
Yep. And so they're like, we thought Dumbledore was bound to pick you, said George indignantly, winning the Triwizard and everything. I suppose all the mad stuff must have counted against him, said George to Fred. Yeah. Yeah, you've caused too much trouble, mate. Well, at least one of you's got your priorities right.
Yeah.
Oh, Mom's going to be revolting. And then... And then Hermione comes in, but right before she comes in, like Harry's looking at it and examining it. So when Hermione comes in, Harry's holding the badge and she's like, I knew it. Me too, Harry. Me too. And then she has to backtrack.
I know. Poor Hermione. She, of course, I mean, like, I feel like out of the friend group, of course, they're going to think it's Hermione and Harry. But I also kind of think it's a little naive because Harry is always like, something is always happening with him. I feel like that school is sometimes just there to protect Harry from doom more over anything. So
Yeah, and it's like, you know, Harry's always attracting so much trouble that he's not in a position to be an authority figure to the other students. He can barely scrape by with his with himself intact.
He's not wrong. He's not wrong.
So, yeah, and Hermione's like, well, that's really, I mean, unexpected, said Ron. Or said George, nodding.
Self-aware, a little bit of, yeah, I mean, Ron is not like, Ron isn't like, well, of course, this would be me.
Yeah, like, he's kind of like. Yeah, Ron is not being, because I think, again, it is a sort of status symbol, but it's certain, like, Ron is neither Percy nor complete rebel like Fred and George. So it's not like it's absolutely revolting to him that he got to be prefect like it is to Fred and George. But at the same time, he doesn't relish it the way like a Percy would.
Yeah. Yeah. He seems kind of like, it, I don't know if indifferent is the right word, but kind of just like, okay. Dumbstruck. Yeah. Yeah.
And we've got Mrs. Weasley who comes in and's like, you know, what color would you like for your pajamas? Get him red and gold to match his badge, said George. His badge, his lovely shiny new prefect's badge. And Mrs. Weasley is just all a Twitter.
Of course. She's so excited. That's fine.
And that she's like, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. Oh, Ron, how wonderful. A prefect. That's everyone in the family. What are Fred and I, next door neighbors?
Right. Yeah. I was like, dang, Mrs. Weasley.
I felt, you know, I feel like definitely there's this sort of jealousy thing for Fred and George. And I don't think they're jealous of the badge, prefect's position badge directly. I don't think that's not what they want out of life. They just don't, they're just jealous that their version of like, you know, wanting to be more entrepreneurial instead of just sitting at the 9-to-5 desk job.
Right.
They just wish their mother would give the same approval to their pursuits and stuff rather than put all like socioeconomic status in this very like rigid hierarchy, which begin right. Like, you know, at school with like being prefect and being like a goody two shoes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Fred and George are fun. And yeah, they're taking the road less traveled, which is kind of disruptive to a lot of families.
Yep. And Mrs. Weasley is so thrilled that she's like, you know, you must have a reward for this. We got Percy an owl, but you now already have one. What do you want?
Can we blame Ron for this? He wants a broom, which is like, and he kind of asks for it kind of like, he knows what he's asking. It's not cheap for them.
No, it's not cheap. Not a really good one, Ron hastened to add. Just a new one for a change. Of course you can.
So this is an interesting question. I know that, you know, he's not getting the Nimbus 2000 or whatever, or the Firebolt or the latest broom that we know of. But it kind of makes me wonder, like, the Weasleys, while they don't have a lot of money, they must save enough money to be able to splurge for these things every now and then. Maybe.
Again, you know, obviously we're in Harry's head, so we don't get to see the exact nature of, you know, I always found it pretty, if they're that bad off, as sometimes they're portrayed as being financially wise, then I think it was irresponsible for them to blow all that lottery money on that trip to Egypt, but that's just me.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, you know, I guess having known some people that, you know, they're very frugal, but then every now and then something comes up and they have like a little bit of savings for that, but I don't know that they did blow all their money going to Egypt. So,
or again, maybe they're not as wise. I can also appreciate the sentiment of you feel trapped in the rat race and you can't, no matter how hard you try, you can't save. So might as well splurge on things because you can't save shit anyway. So I've been there a few times this year or last year.
Nothing wrong with, well, I mean, yeah. We all have.
Again, I just splurged $30 on, you know, a pair of silk veil fans to go with my belly dancing.
They don't call it retail therapy for nothing. So it's all good.
Yes. And Harry has a very peculiar reaction and like struggles with himself about this whole prefect situation. What did you feel about Harry's inner turmoil about this?
kind of wasn't surprised, but because he's not necessarily jealous, but he's also kind of like, why not me? You know, like he's kind of, I'm having problems formulating like what I'm trying to say, but it's an interesting struggle because it's usually, it is him. Like usually he's the winner of this. He does all the things. Like it's out of the golden trio, it's always Harry is number one. So it's in this instance, he's kind of like, why wasn't that me? And, you know, there's like, I think a little kernel of jealousy, but I don't think it's as like prevalent as like what we saw Ron, you know, happen to Ron, where he just got super jealous of Harry. And then I don't know if Harry's kind of capable of that.
Yeah, I think it's specifically in the context of what Harry's going through with from everyone from the ministry shitting on him and the combination of, you know, he wasn't properly informed what was going on. And so he blew a gasket the minute he got at Grimmauld Place. I think if it was a normal context of not all this pressure on him of people calling him a liar and this and that, then like Harry just wouldn't care to have this.
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, because I think he would just be like, oh, okay, like I have my Quidditch thing and Ron has his prefect thing and, you know, that's okay. I think like so many people are shitting on him right now that he's like, what about me?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what to think about it. I mean, just, it's kind of like, just let Ron have it. It's fine. You know, like, don't worry about it. But
yeah. And it's like, maybe Dumbledore doesn't choose prefects because they got themselves in a load of dangerous situations. Maybe because they kept order, Harry.
Novel concept.
Yeah, maybe he chooses them for other reasons. Ron must have something you don't.
What? To be... Yeah, we don't know what that is. Red hair, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, so... So Ron comes back, and Harry's just like, listen, Ron, well done, mate. I never thought it would be me, he said, shaking his head. I thought it would be you. Nah, I've caused too much trouble, said Harry, echoing Fred. Yeah, said, yeah, I suppose. Well, we better get our trunks packed, haven't we? So this whole inner kind of inner turmoil, you know, Harry can keep a lid on it enough, like, that he's not in the crazy cheerful voice like he was with Hermione. But by the time dinner comes around, you know, they decide it's not a sit-down dinner. It's like a little party, and there is a banner that says, congratulations, Ron and Hermione, new prefects.
Right, yeah.
Which is very sweet.
It's very nice, right? Yeah.
I know you went to Catholic school. Did you have sort of prefect things, whether they were called that or not? It's a very British educational thing. We don't have it as much.
You know, if we had the, like, equivalent, unfortunately, I would have been one of them, I think. Because, like, I wasn't, you know, I wasn't, like, a rule enforcer. But, yeah, I mean, I was just thinking of, like, a student, you know, kind of, I was kind of, like, a peer counselor for a long time. So it was a little different. I wasn't, like, telling people.
Yeah, like, they're
they were coming to me with their troubles.
Yeah, no, like there are other things that maybe certain teachers will appoint students to do, but very rarely is it in the sort of rigid prefect that you actually can take like points away or you can like dole out punishments. Like Americans don't want to give children that much authority.
Well, because then you get somebody like we learn later, Draco, with this kind of power, which is not good.
Nope. And So everyone's there. We've got, you know, the Weasleys, Sirius, Lupin, Tonks, and Kingsley, Mad-Eye Moody, and let's see, what do we got? And Mad-Eye's, like, prefect, eh? You know, authority figures always attract trouble, but I suppose Dumbledore thinks you can withstand most major jinxes or he wouldn't have appointed you.
I mean, kind of has proven he can, being friends with Harry.
This is true. And then, who was it? I really like, you know, Harry still is feeling a little conflicted, and this is fueled because he can hear Kingsley Shacklebolt talking about, like, wonder why Dumbledore didn't give it to Potter.
Right.
He would have shown confidence in him. That's what I would have done.
Well, let's just take a moment and not question Dumbledore's methods. Let's just trust it, everybody.
Yep. And then, Harry feels slightly better because he realizes his father nor Sirius were prefects, but Lupin was. And Lupin says, I think Dumbledore might have hoped I would be able to exercise some control over my best friends. I need scarcely say I failed dismally.
Well, there you go. He's not in. I think this is just the kind of, I never really kind of saw a prefect as something that the kids would want. Like, now that I understand, I always thought it was just kind of like kids would probably not really see those people as very favorably. But
Hermione, yeah, of course, because she's already not looked at favorably by her peers, because she knows everything.
She's already kind of a prefect without the title for a while. Yeah. But
yeah. So what do we got? And then we move over in the party to Fred and George, who are doing a backdoor deal with Mundungus.
Oh my gosh. Well, you gotta hustling. That's fine. Whatever. They're not getting support from Mrs. Weasley, so gotta get it somewhere, I guess.
Indeed. And Harry's like, be careful. Moody could have his eye on you.
Oh my god, that's so scary. A little bit.
Yep. And then Harry meanders back to... Oh, it's Moody who calls him over. So Moody shows him an original photograph of the old Order of the Phoenix. And how did you feel about this whole one?
This was this kind of like, this ride gets a little crazy. We get to know about Dumbledore's brother, right? Deadless, mm-hmm. Is that him? And he's like, that was the only time you met him. There's some very graphic depictions of or descriptions of what happened to people. Very interesting, because the picture moves, right?
Yeah.
It's like a moving picture. And probably more interesting for Harry to see, kind of this past and the folks involved. I'm just re-looking at the names again.
Because Moody is just very much operating, oh, this is just like a picture of your parents, like, you know, thinking it's just gonna be like happy, but he's giving all this graphic detail about how everyone died.
Yeah, it's a little intense. It's like somebody was blown to bits, and I'm like, oh my god, let's just pump the brakes here.
Yeah, and just notice that Amelia Bones, who was the only like sane person on that court of Harry's, her brother, Edgar Bones, was part of the original Order of the Phoenix.
Well, there we go. There's some insights there. That's interesting. I did notice one of the people's name was Dorcas. And the only reason that really stood out to me is in the Crucible, one of the girl accusers' name was Dorcas. And I played Dorcas in
that's cute.
I also played Tituba.
So. I got a Goodwill, a copy of The Crucible, and I want to read it again.
I was one of the accusing girls, or the afflicted, and I was also a Tituba, which I grew up in a small town. Don't judge it, okay? Everybody.
Yep. And Harry is able to escape Mad-Eye and is going up the stairs. Turns the corner into the drawing room and sees Ron's corpse.
This was a lot. I mean, like, I had to read this again to just kind of understand what the hell was going on. And I'm not sure I quite get it all. But this would explain the title of the chapter as well, The Woes of Mrs. Weasley. Mm-hmm. But this was a little intense.
Yeah, so ultimately it is a Boggart who obviously the whole purpose of a Boggart is to show one's worst fears. And Mrs. Weasley's fears, of course, is, you know, her family dying. So the Boggart keeps changing from a dead Harry to a dead Bill to a dead Arthur, dead twins. And finally, Lupin comes in and gets rid of the Boggart.
Thank goodness, because this is a lot. And, you know, Mrs. Weasley is like, it's something that she... you know, thinks about that all the time.
Yes, I see them dead all the time.
All the time. I dream about it. Don't tell Arthur.
Yeah, and she's just so worried. Half the family's in the order. It'll be a miracle if we all come through this. And Percy's not talking to us.
She cracks, basically. I feel like Mrs. Weasley has kept up. And I'm going to take the gender thing. Oh, a lot of women do kind of put on this facade. I think, like, you know, Jackie Kennedy was kind of praised for, you know, John JFK's funeral for kind of having being very quote unquote poised. And I think a lot of times it's the expectation, like if women are supposed to present as like, everything's fine. And she kind of cracks.
Yeah. And whether, I said, who knows, and maybe Molly is doing some badass shit for the order on top of everything else, but it seems she's in charge of like the administration of headquarters, of cleaning it up and just doing probably a lot of, you know, unflattering, unglamorous work, which quite frankly, that Sirius should be doing because it's his fucking house.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But he's too busy wallowing in self-pity.
You know,
like a man.
Yeah, exactly. Wallow and wash a dish. Like, come on. Like, get it together.
Yep. So, yeah. So she's probably been doing so much in terms of pure, like, program management.
Yeah.
If not any other secret shit that maybe we don't know about. And then,
I do know she's a secret badass, but I just don't know when it comes out. So.
So, yeah. So she's just, again, she finally breaks down.
Can't blame her. She's been dealing with a lot. And it also kind of, you know, I think there's kind of a tendency to be like, oh, Percy's not talking to us. We're fine. Like, it's upsetting, but not like it's not hurtful. And this is kind of like it's hurtful. She's obviously upset. So,
yeah. And then it basically ends. But Harry closing his bedroom door behind him could not think Mrs. Weasley silly. He felt older than he had ever felt in his life, and it seemed extraordinary to him that barely an hour ago he had been worried about a joke shop and who had gotten a prefect's badge.
Perspective. Good job, Harry.
Yes. And thus ends chapter 9, and we move on to Luna Lovegood.
Yay. Miss Looney Lovegood. So mean.
Looney Lovegood. And so chapter begins with Harry waking up. You know, mayhem, you know, packing everyone, trying to get to the station. Fred and George bewitch their trunks to fly downstairs to save the bother of carrying them, which the result that they had hurtled straight into Ginny and knocked her down 2 flights of stairs into the hall.
Poor Jenny.
I'm just trying to think that just like a huge suitcase just flying at you.
I couldn't feel good. Like, oh my gosh. And Jenny's not like, she's not like a brick house. She's a pretty small person.
Yep. And so there, everything's all mayhem. And Moody's like, where's Sturgis? We're one short for the guard to escort Harry. And Harry's just like, I thought Voldemort was supposed to be lying low, or are you telling me he's going to jump out from behind a dustbin to try and do me in?
Yeah, geez, he's kind of like, what am I supposed to think? Is it like every step I take is, you know, I'm endangering myself, or like he's laying low? So this is just more credence to they're not telling him everything.
Yeah, not telling him everything. And I understand that, because again, they're saying one thing but acting another. And it's like, if anything, doesn't it cause more suspicion that Harry's being escorted by all these people? But kind of reminds me of when, I don't know if I told this story before, but my mom had a horse, you know, that she owned and, you know, had her for a good like 29 years. And so, and she was a thoroughbred, which can be a little bit of a temperamental breed. And so when my mom like was working herself, and was working late, and she needed my dad and I to take the horse in, you know, my dad, who doesn't know shit about horses, only me and my mom do, my dad would use me, basically, and my horsey senses to read, like, the horse's body language to be like, okay, yeah, she's calm, it's nice, we can take her in. So it's like, he trusted me enough to, like, you know, to deal with the horse. But then when I would do my horseback riding lessons, and the ride instructor said, oh, like, you won't ride this horse, well, you're going to ride another horse. And I'm just like, okay. And then secretly, my dad would be calling my mom to be like, Amy's going to ride this horse, is that okay? And it's like, you trust me to, like, make horsey decisions, like, in this area, but you don't trust me. Like, yeah, and the same thing.
Right, yeah. Yeah, 2 different messages. It's kind of hard to know what's what.
Yep. And then we've got Sirius as a dog who is decided, yes, regardless of what Dumbledore has said, that he's going to come with Harry to the station.
That, I mean, you can't really blame him. He's very protective of Harry, which is very nice.
Very protective. And again, as a dog.
I don't know. Yeah, he's kind of still here. He has to do that because of a, mm-hmm, he's still got a bit of a reputation.
Yep. And then he, and so they all head out and Tonks meets them as an old woman.
Oh my goodness. Tonks, she's pretty silly.
Yeah, an old woman greeted them on the corner. She had tightly curled gray hair and wore a purple hat shaped like a pork pie.
I need to look up what a pork pie hat is. I think I know, but I don't know.
Yep. And so, but yeah, definitely Tonks changed her shape. But yeah, can be old, can be young, can be anything that is human.
I would like to have that power.
Yeah, and of course, Miss Weasley complained about traveling, and it's like, you know, if only Arthur could have gotten us cars from Ministry again, but Fudge wouldn't let him borrow so much as an empty ink bottle these days.
Yeah, maybe we're like, don't, I wouldn't just, I would just kind of assume that Fudge is not going to do me any favors right now, so.
Yep. So basically, took them 20 minutes to reach Cream Cross by foot, which I never really thought about that before, not that I've been to London or have any sort of legit perspective, but I'm just like, I guess I didn't fully realize that Grimald Place is that much in the epicenter of London.
Yeah, that is very close. I didn't think about that either.
Yep. And so they go to platform 9 3/4 and everyone's like, nice dog, Harry. And then everyone's saying goodbye, be good, don't get into trouble, you know, all good things. And then Harry's looking out and Sirius as a dog is chasing him.
Aww.
Chasing the train as it pulls away. Well, first Sirius gets up on his hind legs and put his paws on Harry's shoulder.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh. It's just funny. I mean, like, it's very sweet when it's a dog, but when you know it's like a man as a dog, it's kind of like, it's kind of confusing. It's like, it's nice, but it's also kind of crazy. I don't know.
Yep. And it's like, Harry's like, oh, let's go find a compartment. And Ron and Hermione, like, we can't. We have to do prefect shit.
Yeah, it's a bummer sometimes when you get that more responsibility. But
I know, right?
Yeah.
So where does Harry and Ginny basically meet up? They find Neville, and then they go into the compartment that originally Neville avoided. He's like, oh, I didn't want to interrupt. And no, it's just Loony Lovegood. She's all right. Hi, Luna, said Ginny. Is it okay if we take these seats? The girl beside the window looked up. She had straggly waist-length, dirty blonde hair, very pale eyebrows, a protuberant eyes that gave her a permanently surprised look. Harry knew at once why Neville had chosen to pass this compartment by. The girl gave off an aura of distinct dottiness. Perhaps it was the fact that she had stuck her wand behind her left ear for safekeeping, or that she had chosen to wear a necklace of butterbeer caps, or that she reading a magazine upside down. Her eyes ranged over Neville and came to rest on Harry. She nodded.
Lovely introduction. Just seems like a quirky girl. I like her already. Doesn't take much, but...
Yes. Did you have a good summer, Luna? Yes, said Luna dreamily without taking her eyes off Harry. Yes, it was quite enjoyable, you know. You're Harry Potter, she added. I know I am, said Harry. And I don't know who you are. I'm nobody, said Neville. No, you're not. Neville Longbottom. Luna is in my year, but in Ravenclaw. So I'm just curious how, obviously, in the same year as Ginny, Ginny would have had certain classes with her. Like, I'm trying to think. Gryffindors traditionally, they always have herbology. They always, or no, they always have, charms with Ravenclaws.
Oh, okay. Because
herbology with Hufflepuffs, potions is always Slytherin. But anyway, so I'm just would have nice to see, like, how did Ginny and Luna, because it doesn't seem like they're friends, but they are friendly.
It's kind of funny that, because, you know, when before she's not like, oh, that's Luna Lovegood. She's like, that's Loony Lovegood. So she kind of takes a little dig at her first, and then she's like, oh, it's Luna. You know, I think that was her that called her Loony. Maybe I'm wrong. No, it was her. There's room in this one. There's only Loony Lovegood in here. Who said that?
Yeah, I think that was Jenny.
Jenny.
I think. Okay. And she said she's all right. So
yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. And then it's like, guess what I got for my birthday, said Neville. And so Neville's uncle, Algie, that name is not lost on me.
Right.
Decided to give Neville a Mimbulus Mimbletonia.
This very interesting plant. Because we know Neville's favorite subject is herbology, and he's decent at it. I mean, he's still a bit clumsy. And then
The Mimbletonia, in essence, looks like a cactus with a bunch of boils.
That's really gross.
And they're really rare. I don't know if there's one in the greenhouse at Hogwarts even. I can't wait to show it to Professor Sprout. My great uncle got it for me in Assyria. I'm going to see if I can breed from it. And Harry's just like, does it do anything? Loads of stuff. It's got an amazing defense mechanism. Hold Trevor for me. And Neville goes and just pops it with the quill.
Yeah, and then it's like, what is it? The liquid squirted from every boil on the plant, thick, stinking, dark jets of it. They hit the ceiling, the windows, and spattered Luna's magazine. Like, yeah. This is a pretty nasty little plant.
And it's called, it fires stink sap.
Ugh, pleasant.
And so when Harry is covered in stink sap is when his crush Cho comes in.
Of course.
Because that's life.
That's life.
Middle school.
Yeah, it truly is.
Yep. And Harry's just like, he would have liked Cho to discover him sitting with a group of very cool people, laughing their heads off at a joke he had just told. He would not have chosen to be sitting with Neville and Loony Lovegood, clutching a toad and dripping in stink sap.
I guess, like, Harry and I have different tastes, because I would have been more intrigued by that situation than some jock telling a joke with some friends. I don't know.
Yep. And Ginny is able to get rid of the stuff easily, and it immediately vanishes. And we've got Ron and Hermione did not turn up for nearly an hour. You know, I'm Ron eating chocolate frogs, of course. And then, you know, there are 2 fifth-year prefects from each house, so boy and girl from each. And so we're told that, of course, Draco Malfoy and Pansy Parkinson are the Slytherin prefects.
That complete cow is what Hermione says. I'm like, geez, Hermione, let's chill.
Yep. And Hufflepuff, it's Ernie McMillan and Hannah Abbott.
Okay.
And then for Ravenclaw, it's Anthony Goldstein and Padma Patil. And Luna's just like, you went to the Yule Ball with Padma Patil. Yeah, I know I did, he said, looking mildly surprised. She didn't enjoy it very much, Luna informed him. She doesn't think you treated her very well because you wouldn't dance with her.
She's got all the hot. She's got the tea, Miss Luna does.
Yeah, so I guess I wanted to ask, like, how do you interpret Luna? Because a lot of people, on the positive end, view her as very, like, refreshing.
Mm, okay.
You know? But another times, but is that refreshness just a sugarcoating of being socially inept?
Oh, that's interesting. I guess something like, you know, in these kind of instances, we learn that here shortly that her father is the editor at the Quibbler, which is kind of like, I'm guessing, kind of a gossipy magazine. So she, you know, seems a little gossipy, but in a very like interesting and not like whispering behind your back, but telling people to their face kind of way, which I think is kind of, I would say I find her refreshing. As a quite socially awkward person myself, maybe I see her as more relatable than I do, you know, socially inept, but I don't know. And like I said, my niece really likes this character. So I always think, you know, when you have these characters, it's probably a little bit of a reflection of self. Is why you have some sort of pull to it. So I don't know.
Yeah. Again, you already know how certain ships in Harry Potter end. Although I have to say one of my favorite non-canon ships is Harry and Luna.
Oh, I didn't know that one. Okay.
And
that
wasn't even necessarily from the very beginning. It's just because that actress, Ivana Lynch, did such a good job portraying Luna Lovegood that I'm just like, Harry and Luna, yay! Hashtag Harry and Luna.
That's very interesting. Yeah, they did cast the perfect actress for this, didn't they?
They did. And so, you know, we've got the Quibbler, and Harry recognizes this this magazine as the same one that Arthur or Kingsley was telling, you know, Arthur, you know, have Sirius take a look at this. He'll find it amusing. And so he reads the headline and it's like Sirius Black, victim or villain. And it starts off with like, and Harry's like getting excited, like, wow, an article like even suggesting that Sirius could be innocent. But right. But it's completely goes into another different crazy direction. And so I would describe the Quibbler not so much as gossipy, but more like it is a epicenter for a lot of like conspiracy theorist stuff. Like
some more like the National Enquirer.
National Enquirer, okay. Yeah. And so there's another article about Cornelius Fudge, like Willing says he murders goblins.
Yeah, they go full on in that article. That's a little intense.
Yep. And then, yeah, just lots of things. And Ron's like, anything good in there? Of course not, Hermione said scathingly. The Quibbler's rubbish. Everyone knows that. Excuse me, said Luna. Her voice had suddenly lost its dreamy quality. My father's the editor. And, okay. Again, I adore Luna so mm-hmm. much. But in the light of the COVID-19 misinformation, pandemic yes. of misinformation, I am a little more critical of her in this regard.
Yeah, it definitely takes like the National Enquirer, you know, I remember from growing up was kind of like, you know, what was on the cover, like Bat Boy, just like ridiculous things. That was kind of conspiracy theory for fun, not conspiracy theory to cause thousands and thousands of deaths. So.
Yeah. And this and a lot of people have said the same things about Fox News.
That people, it's like the Quibbler?
Well, and that Fox News also started where everyone knew it was borderline ridiculous and like satire. And then it grew to like just legit be considered wow. a thing.
I didn't know that. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, like some of Luna's like, you know, theories I appreciate because as we'll learn later, like she like thinks, you know, that maybe certain animals exist that not everyone is agreed with. So there are some elements of her personality or like her dreaminess or pure faith-based things I can appreciate because, again, like thinking of a, you know, maybe there's an animal out there we haven't discovered yet. Like that's not really doing harm.
Right. Yeah.
You know, to anyone. But, you know, making certain insinuations, maybe not the serious thing, but making certain insinuations about, like, certain politicians and, again, sowing doubt in those leaders when they're trying to convey very pertinent information during a pandemic.
Right. Yeah.
That does do harm. And so, you know, this was published in a time where everyone just like, oh, haha, Luna, like, she believes in all these crazy things. Isn't right. it cute? But, and as much as I still love her, it's just some of it, I'm just like, no, that's not really cute anymore.
Yeah, this was, I mean, this was definitely written in a time where, like, I enjoy I like Bigfoot, things like that, like Mothman, like that I like those conspiracy theory things.
Yeah, cryptozoology.
Yeah, that's kind of my jam. But when it results in a bunch of people dying, I'm a little less interested in conspiracy theory. And I remember the time, you know, about when this was written, that was kind of the extent of it. No, I mean, like, that's not completely true. I mean, like JFK and the magic bullet and all that stuff, it was still going on. But I guess the reach was a little more limited. You really have to seek that information.
And even if you believe certain conspiracy theories of certain things in history, like, you know, we just, again, just without the context of a contagious disease, people right. believing in certain conspiracy theories did not have an impact on others.
Right.
So yeah. It's like, if you want to be anti-science, be anti-science and just stay away from me. But that's not the case, where being anti-science means that you're willing to walk around being a vector for a contagious disease that impacts me.
Yeah. Thanks for that, everybody. 2 years. What the hell?
Yeah. 2 years and a new cousin of Omicron coming. I don't know why it's not being called its own Greek letter, but whatever.
Ugh.
Yep. And of course, we do have to at least get one visit on the train from Draco Malfoy.
Of course, who is Prefect Draco Malfoy, which is just exactly what he needed, right? Was more power.
Yeah, and it's, again, it's this weird thing, you know, Draco has to show up because he has to show, like, look, I got prefect and you didn't, you know? And then, and Draco's like, you know, how does it feel being, like, second best to a Weasley?
Yeah, what an asshole. Like, I'm sorry, but there's, like, nothing.
Yep. And again, it's not like Draco can do anything because both Ron and Hermione are prefects. Like, they just saw each other an hour ago.
He just wants to be a jerk, and he's doing a great job.
And Draco ends, well, just watch yourself, Potter, because I'll be dogging your footsteps in case you step out of line.
Ugh, gross.
So what do you think of this use of the word dogging?
Oh, you think that, like, that's kind of an, that maybe.
Because that's kind of what Harry and Hermione are thinking right now.
That he's kind of privy to Sirius being the. I don't know. I didn't pick up on that when I read it. So interesting.
Mm-hmm. And so train ride carries onward and finally reach Hogsmeade, and it's just chaos. And they're looking for Hagrid, you know, to be escorting the first years, but there's no Hagrid.
There's no Hagrid. This is not good. This is troublesome.
Instead, it is his substitute teacher, the same one as last year, Professor Grubbly Plank.
Nothing wrong with her, really.
Nothing wrong with her and her and her unicorns. She's a nice lady, but, you know, we heart Hagrid.
Yeah, we miss Mr. Hagrid.
Yep. And what did you think of the no longer horseless carriages?
Yeah, I'm revisiting this. These dragonish and pupilless eyes with wings spreading... pretty wild creature here. We don't know the name of it yet, do we, these creatures? I'm sorry if we...
No, we do not.
Okay.
Refer to them the way Kevin first referred to them. Spooky horses.
Spooky horses. That is so spot on. Yeah, I'm like, leathery bat wings. Like, these sound pretty scary.
Like, and they don't literally have any flesh to them. Like, their fur is, like, on their skeletal form.
Oh my. I am excited to see what these look like in film. So.
And, you know, Harry can see them. Ron cannot.
Interesting.
And Luna comes up and is like, no, it's okay. I can see them too. Can you? Said Harry desperately, turning to Luna. He could see the bat-winged horses reflected in her wide, silvery eyes. Oh, yes, said Luna. I've been able to see them ever since my first day here. They've always pulled the carriages. Don't worry. You're just as sane as I am. Smiling faintly, she climbed into the misty, musty interior of the carriage after Ron. Not altogether reassured, Harry followed her. So that's a very famous Luna Lovegood quote. You're just as sane as I am.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one. That's, yeah.
Yeah, so what do you think of all of this? Of what could possibly be the source of, like, the carriages have always been described as horseless. Harry sees them, and Luna Lovegood is asserting that they've always carried the carriages.
So it kind of, if I would venture to guess, that there's some connection, obviously, I wouldn't say gift, but something that Luna is attuned to that Harry just recently is attuned to, which is strange, because usually Harry is like kind of, yeah, he made a Patronus, and oh my God, he's like the youngest person to have a Patronus multiple times, you know, not the youngest person ever, but he's usually the one with the gift. So I wonder what the connection is between the two, because obviously Ron can't see this, but Luna has seen them for quite a while. So,
theories about what that connection, what could be the,
you know, source? If I'm going to guess, it would have to do with like the Dementors. Like some involvement in the Dementors, and I'm trying to remember if... Oh,
so the same thing that makes Harry so susceptible to Dementors is what?
Like his scar? Is that what you're talking about?
Or no, I'm just talking about anything.
I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to remember if he, like, so the last time he encountered a Dementor, did he go back to school? I don't know. We've been reading these books so long. It's like it's all flowing into one. I'm like, where the hell did he find? Did he? I mean, we know.
All here's the what I'm trying to piece were in together. Book three.
Okay. So my theory gone. I have no idea. Okay. Unless there's some Voldemort connection. But that doesn't make sense either. So I'm totally lost.
Okay. So you'll find out in this book. So you don't have to wait. Good.
Thank goodness. All right.
All right. And thus concludes chapter 10, Loony Lovegood, which, again, one of the reasons why I love Order of the Phoenix is just we get the introduction of so many great characters and then a lot of characters who come back, like Lupin.
Yeah, that was nice to see that so early on. So,
alrighty then. So what was your gothic geek out?
I feel like this was a little hard for me. I wish I would have called the spooky horses my gothic geek out, because it's kind of it's very goth, like of a horse. But my thought was Mrs. Weasley's like whole Bogart situation, and kind of the, you know, plagued with all these horrible dreams, and they weren't dreams but visions, and she's kind of breaks down. I thought that was kind of very in the spirit of the gothic, you know, imagining family deceased and things like mm-hmm. that. So
yes, indeed, in the most gothic house in Harry Potter.
Yes.
Because with Mrs. Weasley and the Bogart just kind of showing, it definitely illustrates what is at stake with the war, you know, being at this point, Voldemort is laying low, but Mrs. Weasley understands completely what this means. And I'm not really spoiling anything because, like, there's only one line about it in book 7, but, you know, that photo that Moody showed Harry and saying, like, Gideon and Fabian Prewitt, it took like 5 Death Eaters to kill them. They died like heroes. Those twin brothers, those were Molly Weasley's brothers.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow. So that's alluding to some power.
Yeah. So Molly was a Prewitt before she became a Weasley. And so Molly has had family die in the war, and it's, you know, it says something that, you know, though those two brothers of hers, they were twins, Fabian and Gideon, and her twins are named Fred and George.
Okay. All right. So it's all kind of making a little sense why she might be a little harder on the twins too.
Mm-hmm. But,
interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, my gothic geek out was, you know, I can't call them their names yet, the spooky horses.
I feel like kind of an idiot because those spooky horses were pretty cool. I love a gothic monster.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And it's a sort of gothic monster. And it's just something we haven't really seen before. Like, nothing is immediately coming to mind in terms of whether Western or Eastern, like, folklore or legends that, like, quite describes the sort of creature that they're describing.
It's like Pegasus, but like a goth Pegasus?
It's like a gothic, like, Grim Reaper Pegasus.
Dang, that's pretty cool. If I do say so.
That's throwing a bit of dragon in it, too.
Yeah.
I appreciate that, you know, originality of, you know, because it's hard to come up with, like, a mythical creature, you know, nowadays with fantasy literature so well established. But, you know, so when a whole new creature comes onto the scene, it's just like, all right.
It's pretty badass. Yeah, that's a pretty cool, I don't know yet named creature. I also don't, now I'm like, this is going to drive me crazy, but that's okay. I'll wait. I will.
Alrighty then. And I have to pull up the web page for the definition. All right. But now we move on to Tarot of the Day.
All right.
And the card that I pulled out was the 5 of Cups.
Okay.
As we know, Cups typically deals with the element of water. So a lot of emotions.
Yes.
So the 5 of Cups often appears in a tarot reading when a situation hasn't turned out the way you expected and you are sad, regretful, or disappointed. I pulled this card out for a different reason that we discussed off mic.
Oh, yeah. I bet so. Yes.
Yeah. Instead of moving on with your life, you are choosing to wallow in your self-pity. And you can focus right now. All you can focus right now is on what went wrong and how you failed. It's time to get over it. Sure, feel the feels, but set yourself a time and limit your self-pity and then pull yourself together and move on. Which is kind of true because in the pure imagery of the Five of Cups, traditionally, there's a guy in a cloak who's like looking over, who's looking on three cups that have fallen down, and he's clearly sad about them, but behind him there are two cups that are still upright.
Definitely
honing in on that, you know, focusing a lot on pessimism and things like that, but there's still a glimmer of hope. You're just maybe not in the right perspective to see it.
Gotcha.
So that's a big part of the imagery and symbolism of Five of Cups. And so when it comes to this, you believe maybe there's something more going on. But in terms of this pure description that I just read, that makes me think of Harry and Hermione's theory about, you know, what's going on with Sirius.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one.
He's kind of, again, wallowing in self-pity, at least in their, you know, from their position, from their perspective, and that, you know, he needs to, you know, suck it up.
And yeah, kind of with the prefect thing, he gets over that pretty quick. I think Harry does.
Oh yeah. Although there are a few good pages, many pages devoted to that. That is also something like Harry's so disappointed, but there are the other cups right behind him. He's like, again. And I think he wouldn't have even cared about the prefect thing if so many other adults in his life, you know, were not shitting on him.
Right. Yeah. He was having a hard time already.
Yeah. The Five of Cups suggests you're stuck in the past and can't let go. Old wounds or bitter memories flood your mind as you think about what happened. You may blame yourself, believe you're a victim of life's circumstances. These negative emotions are holding you back from your fullest potential. Again, I've been feeling a lot of this. Release them so you can move on and create positive change.
Do we think this is a little bit of Mrs. Weasley at this
time? That's exactly what I was going to suggest. Yeah, Mrs. Weasley is being a little stuck in the past. Not that she is incorrect in terms of her worry, but she's letting that worry paralyze her. And, you know, and Lupin is able to bring forth the, you know, remind her that in, you know, beforehand in the 70s, like, Voldemort had all the cards and was just picking them off, and they were totally constantly reacting and defending. Like, they had no means to, like, be offensive, whereas now they now know substantially more and can act more freely in the way that, you know, Voldemort choosing to be lay low at this point works to their advantage.
Right. Yeah. I would, you know, with the information that you shared with about Molly Weasley, I think that, you know, we don't know that yet about her brothers, but I'm sure that's on her mind. And when she's kind of having the reactions she's having.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. The Five of Cups shows you that even though things are not going your way, new opportunities and possibilities are waiting for you, but only when you are ready. It's time to shift your mindset and focus on what can go right from this point onward. Be open to the brighter side of life and know many blessings are in disguise right now. Instead of giving it the glass is half empty perspective, look at it as the glass half full. I would like to apply that to Harry in regards to his meeting of Luna Lovegood.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, their relationship will evolve, and, you know, Luna is one of the most prominent secondary characters that is not a Gryffindor.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't know. Yeah.
And so, you know, their relationship and friendship, you know, will evolve. And so, you know, a lot of times with Harry and others, what they think of Luna as being like weird and out there and socially awkward, they end up, you know, quite liking and find to be endearing later on when they get to know her.
It's usually the case, everyone. Just think about that. Trust the weirdos a little bit.
Okay. Alrighty then. And then we move on to the Black Moon Astrology card of the day. Oh, yeah. And I magically flipped to the right page on the in the book. It is card number 33, which is all about the ninth house.
The ninth house. Okay.
Ninth house. Which, another word for it, faith. Okay, let's see. Obstacles are being lifted. The ninth house in astrology is the house position for the sign Sagittarius and is ruled by the planet Jupiter, the planet of openness, luck, and expansion. This area of the traditional horoscope wheel is the house of travel, philosophy, high-mindedness, and also religion. Which, again, makes, yeah, the biggest, my moon sign is Sagittarius, and the biggest way in which I'm very Sagittarius is my love of travel and knowledge.
That makes sense.
Like that sort of high-mindedness. So the ninth house represents a search for meaning through established structures. Things to do with the government and religion may come about whenever the ninth house is included. Destiny, fate, and karma all come into play, as well as your view of what God may or may not be. It is the house of erudite knowledge, higher learning, lawyers, doctors, and astrologers. It is most definitely of the higher mind and our need to unite with something greater. In this way, the ninth house represents churches and schools, especially ones that are old, established, and scholarly. So it's interesting because in some ways I think of Luna Lovegood in terms of the high-mindedness and her being a Ravenclaw.
Right, yeah.
Which is the house that values knowledge the most, as she says, the cat phrase, wit beyond measure is man's greatest treasure.
Right.
But at the same time, the spirit of a nice house with faith is also tends to be in a more, you know, seeking certain these things within like established structures. And that's just not Luna at all, because she's an Aquarius, so she's total like rebel, like unorthodox.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely I'm thinking,
Since it opposes the third house of communication and writing, the ninth house represents publishing and influences through the written word, which Luna Lovegood's father is an editor.
Yeah, that's true. I was thinking of outside application of that card outside of the podcast to somebody. But that makes good sense.
Yeah, when this card... It is time to consider your implementing plans in the broadest terms. It means you will have to go outside your ordinary life to achieve your goals. Long-distance travels, journeys, and voyages to unknown places may figure in regarding your question. The ninth house is the house of explorers and pilgrims, where there is a quest and a destination. It is where we seek guidance and understanding. The possibility of returning to school and furthering your education is likely in the near future. Well, in terms of pure scholarly endeavors, the gang is going back to Hogwarts.
Right. Yeah, that's
pretty... To do all their scholarly shit.
To scholar it up.
Scholar it up. And just in terms of journeys, I like to think of Harry, like obviously the journey of travel of being on the Hogwarts Express. But I think from what I know of the book is, and just, you know, I think of Harry going on the spiritual journey of trying to understand certain things. Because as I told you, like... You know, she doesn't make us wait for everything until book seven, but a good chunk of things are revealed by the end of the fifth book. So that sort of spiritual journey that Harry has to go in understanding his connection with Voldemort.
Oh, okay. That's exciting.
Occasionally, this card indicates a temporary disconnect from close family where you depart from your known life into another one as a pilgrim or a seeker. Yeah. So it's kind of paradoxical. Like, it's, again, lots of philosophy and high-mindedness, but it's the sad thing is, again, because I'm coming from as a pagan, like, all into New Age spirituality, it's like philosophy and high-mindedness, like, I don't associate that with religion anymore. Or at least specifically, I don't associate it with established organized religions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is sad, because, you know, it is kind of sad to see, like, for example, in Islam, like, my husband is studying Islamic philosophers that were, again, the 11th and 13th centuries, yet they were totally fine with being able to incorporate, like, Greco-Roman philosophical concepts, and that wasn't the end of the world, or that wasn't, you know, completely shitting on Islam or anything. You know, but that level of like learning and exploring things just, I feel, is absent in a lot of modern interpretations of Islam, which emphasizes the more legalistic, you just shut up and do what you're told.
Oh, wow. That's very interesting. I wouldn't know, but that's very interesting.
Because that's the whole reason why a lot of people get into whether paganism or other forms of New Age spirituality and leave organized religion, because so much of it is so constricting and you cannot reckon I cannot, and a lot of people cannot reconcile the very rigid things that the certain books say that just do not foster high-mindedness or philosophy and do not coincide with modern humanist sensibilities.
No, they usually seem in direct conflict with each other. So
yeah. So yeah, good card. Got me thinking.
Good card. There you go.
Alrighty then. And now we move on to our final exercise, fan fiction time.
I feel like mine is kind of, whatever. It is what it is. Do you want me to go first?
Sure.
Okay. I had just proposed, what if Harry had made prefect instead of Ron?
Yeah, quite honestly, I don't think Harry would have been that happy.
Yeah, I feel like it would have been like another... I kind of understand how the prefect is seen at school. It's just like another thing I feel like kids would have to hate on him for, and another responsibility. He's just got the responsibility of being alive at this point. So,
I don't think it was about, it was the concept of relative loss. It's not that Harry directly wanted it. It's just didn't want Ron to have it. It's like Algeria, Morocco, and the whole dispute over the Western Sahara. Like, Morocco doesn't really care all that much about the Western Sahara. They just don't want Algeria to have it. Or is there the other way around? Like, Algeria doesn't want Morocco to have it, even though they don't personally care about it all that much. Or, like, my cats, who there's one cat who cares very little for, like, toys and things like that. But the minute he sees another cat playing with a toy, he wants the toy.
I kind of thought it might hurt Ron's feelings more. I feel like we might have another episode of Ron wouldn't, you know, kind of know what to say. I don't know because
Ron admits, I thought it was going to be you.
Right.
If it was going to be anyone in our little golden trio, because again, he doesn't worship it like Percy, but nor is he completely a rebel like Fred and George. So,
right.
I can't say with certainty. I don't think Ron would blow up, but
Well,
again, like all the things that Harry's dealing with, he has no control over. Like the prefect thing would not have made it better,
right?
You know,
right.
In any way, shape, or form. So.
Well, that was the best I could do this week.
Yep. So mine is, I also did what if Harry was made prefect, because that's the obvious one that he's like constantly like contemplating.
Right.
I thought of, what if Sirius and Harry had a mature talk when Harry realized that Sirius was being a little sourpuss.
Well, then we probably wouldn't have the speculation. And I guess kind of what I said, like maybe Sirius is, there's more to it. I feel like he kind of demonstrated the opposite. Like maybe they're kind of spot on where he was, you know, jumping at the door and trying to hug him in his dog form. Like maybe it is really kind of more of an emotional thing than it is a logical thing. But I don't know. So if they had that conversation.
It would have been nice. But at the same time, it's like, I feel like Harry would have to bring it up. Like, I was a big fan of Sirius as a kid, because he's just the badass escape convict who was wrongly convicted. Like, you know, that definitely has a pull over kids' imaginations. But as I get older, I am able to see his flaws. If anything, not that I like Snape by any means, but in terms of understanding the characters and their flaws, if anything, I kind of see like Sirius has gone down in my estimation and Snape has gone a little up. Appreciate him as the complicated character. He still sucks. But Sirius also sucks in his own ways. And part of it is, you know, this, he's in a state of arrested development because he he is not what we would think of as a, he's not at the maturity level that a 33 or 34 year old man would, 35 year old man would be at this point. Wow. He's stuck from when he first got into Azkaban at 20.
Yeah.
So his mental age is literally not much older than Harry.
That's a good point that I didn't think
and
about.
And so I think the big, you know, discussion in the fandom is how much do we excuse Sirius's more childlike, you know, rebellious behavior given to how horribly he was traumatized, and can we expect so much from him? But naturally, his immaturity does have an impact on Harry.
Yeah. Those are good questions. Those are big questions for...
Yes, very big questions for people who are big fans of Sirius.
Yeah, there we go. Yes. Yeah.
Which I find quite interesting, because especially in the dichotomy of Sirius, despite being on the run, was actually a very responsible godfather to Harry and like chewing him out, like, what the fuck are you doing with Victor Crumb all by yourself, you know, and that sort of thing. And just because he's in a really bad emotional situation back in that house, like, he's just completely regressed.
Yeah, interesting. I don't know. It would be nice for them to have a talk. And unfortunately, like you said, I think Harry would have to approach it. So,
which is putting Harry in the parent.
Right. Right.
Role.
Right.
And not Sirius, who is the godfather.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Interesting.
Anyway, all good things. And so thus concludes this episode of Rambling Raven Puffs. Tune in next time, where we shall cover chapters 11 and 12. The Sorting Hat's new song, and Professor Umbridge.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. All righty then. See you guys, or talk to you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophia Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophia Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophiaMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophia Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophiaMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophia Mare Studios podcast.